We lived in Elmhurst at that time. I'm sorry.
Okay.
After my mother's father died, we moved to Elmhurst, New York. Mm-hmm. Lived there for a couple of years until my mom passed away. And then after that, my grandmother came into Elmhurst to take care of us for about a year till I finished eighth grade, or part of eighth grade. Then we moved out to Pluckerman,
mm-hmm.
where I finished up in Pluckerman School, which was a four-room schoolhouse, which I was quite unused to with living in the city. To come out to a little tiny schoolhouse like that was enough something to be aware of. Anyway, I finished grammar school there and then eventually went to Somerville High School.
All right.
And
wow.
Enjoyed many years in Pluckerman. Most of my duties as a young man. My grandmother was a good taskmaster, but a wonderful woman. But my job mainly at that time was because there were no electric heating. We had a coal stove in the kitchen and a large furnace in the basement that burned wood. So Bill's job was most of the time to walk himself up to the mountain on the farm that my grandmother owned, into the mountain to chop down trees, to bring them down, drag them down from the mountain,
mm-hmm.
down to the backyard where eventually they were sawed up and chopped for wood to burn the furnace, to burn in the stove so that we were able to have heat and to be able to cook.
Wow.
My years in Somerville High School were average. I played a little basketball, not much, but
What was it like? Was there a huge difference in the urban versus the country back then?
Well, as a young man, those type of things did not imprint too much on your mind. But yes, there was a big difference in the change from city life as it was to country life. There was not as many people around, of course, and when you had to go someplace in the country, it was a long walk from. We lived about a mile and a half up Washington Valley Road between Martinsville and Pluckerman.
Right.
And to get to the school bus, I had to walk from our farmhouse down about a mile and a half to the center of Pluckerman, where I'd get the school bus to go to Somerville.
You had to walk a mile and a half.
I had a mile and a half up and down.
Now, what do you say?
And they say through snow both ways. What's the story they
uphill.
Talk about?
Uphill both ways. But here we have kids that... They don't even walk a mile and a half to the school.
That's right.
You're walking a mile and a half to the bus to get to the school.
That's right, yeah.
Oh, my.
Yeah. So school activities were hampered because there was no bus service after the regular bus service. So if you were staying for extracurricular activities, it was difficult.
Right.
So living out in the country, I didn't participate in that much other than basketball and a few other things I don't remember. Mm-hmm. But anyway, that passed.
All right, so you're a teenager over here in Somerville.
Yeah.
And what were your aspirations at that point? What are you planning on doing with the rest of your life?
Well, there wasn't much aspiration because the income in the family was such that thinking of college was out of line at that point.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if I was college ready.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't go anyway because of the money situation.
Right.
So that went by, and it was the depression had started or was starting.
Right.
And although jobs were not plentiful, my father was lucky enough not to lose his job during the depression, such as some of my relatives did not. I had an uncle who lived in Brooklyn who lost his job. He was an electrician for Hearn's department store.
Mm-hmm.
And lost a job and was out of work, and it was part of the WPA program where they were offered jobs to do the type of work he was suited for in projects where they built highways and buildings and things of that nature under the Roosevelt administration.
Mm-hmm.
Roosevelt was criticized for the work that he did, but at least what he did was make it necessary to work to get what you needed for food and money. It wasn't a giveaway program like it is today.
Right. I was going to say that. It seems like it's a little bit more reputable that you're going out working and earning what you're bringing.
I think that's the problem with today's world is that it's a giveaway program. Nobody's made to do something to earn anything. It's an easygoing thing, and it's sad.
Yeah.
that where the president administration could have invented the CCC camp. It used to be a thing like the Army where young men were sent out to the wilds of America and lived in barracks, just like you do in the Army. Mm-hmm. And they cleaned up the forest and built roads and things of that nature.
Right.
That doesn't happen today. Everybody's looking for the freebie.
Yeah.
Whereas those days, if you wanted something, you had to work for it, at least produce some work.
And consequently, with having all those people do that, we built our infrastructure.
That is correct.
And here we got all these crumbling roads and bridges and all this stuff.
When you take a ride through the country and see the amount of trees that are down from the last couple of storms laying there, mm-hmm. during the CCC program, that didn't happen because the men were sent into the woods to chop that wood up, carry it out, and clean up the forest, for one thing, as well as helping to build roads and other projects that went on at that time.
Right. Neat. Wow, I couldn't agree with you more. The Depression hit. You're everybody's trying to make ends meet.
That's
and
right.
Let's see, the crash started in 29.
That's
right?
Correct.
So you were 11.
That's right. Yes.
And then we move into the 30s, and so now you're in your teens, hitting all this turmoil in our country.
Right.
Did you have a trade you want to go into? Or?
Well, I didn't know. I didn't have one. I the only problem was to find a job of any kind. And luckily, my father, who worked for a paint company, Patterson Sargent Paint at that time, he was the printer for he printed all their labels for the paint cans.
Mm-hmm.
He had been a printer for Collier's Magazine and other places, and I guess lost his job there and had this job at the paint factory. So after graduating from high school, with nothing available, he was able to get me a job there also.
Mm-hmm.
And this was in Long Island City, and we had to commute from Pluckerman to every day.
How'd you do that?
So we did that by getting up at 4 o'clock in the morning, between 4 and 5 o'clock in the morning,
right.
Driving to Somerville, New Jersey, getting a train to Hoboken, a ferry over to New York. We lived in Elmhurst at that time, I'm sorry.
Okay.
After my mother's father died, we moved to Elmhurst, New York. Mm-hmm. Lived there for a couple of years until my mom passed away. And then after that, my grandmother came into Elmhurst to take care of us for about a year till I finished eighth grade, or part of eighth grade. Then we moved out to Pluckerman,
mm-hmm.
where I finished up in Pluckerman School, which was a four-room schoolhouse, which I was quite unused to with living in the city. To come out to a little tiny schoolhouse like that was enough. Something to be aware of. Anyway, I finished grammar school there and then eventually went to Somerville High School.
All right.
And
wow.
Enjoyed many years in Pluckerman. Most of my duties as a young man. My grandmother was a good taskmaster, but a wonderful woman. But my job mainly at that time was because there were no electric heating. We had a coal stove in the kitchen and a large furnace in the basement that burned wood. So Bill's job was most of the time to walk himself up to the mountain on the farm that my grandmother owned, into the mountain to chop down trees, to bring them down, drag them down from the mountain,
mm-hmm.
down to the backyard where eventually they were sawed up and chopped for wood to burn the furnace, to burn in the stove so that we were able to have heat and to be able to cook.
Wow.
My years in Somerville High School were average. I played a little basketball, not much, but...
Was there a huge difference in the urban versus the country back then?
Well, as a young man, those type of things did not imprint too much on your mind, but yes, there was a big difference in the change from city life as it was mm-hmm. to country life. There was not as many people around, of course, and when you had to go someplace in the country, it was a long walk from, we lived about a mile and a half up Washington Valley Road between Martinsville and Pluckerman.
Right.
And to get to the school bus, I had to walk from our farmhouse down about a mile and a half to the center of Pluckerman where I'd get the school bus to go to Somerville.
You had to walk a mile and a half.
I had a mile and a half up and down.
Now, what do you say?
And they say through snow both ways. What's the story they
uphill.
Talk about?
Uphill both ways. But you know, we have kids that they don't even walk a mile and a half to the school.
That's right.
You're walking a mile and a half to the bus to get to the school.
That's right. Yeah.
Oh, my.
Yeah. So school activities were hampered because there was no bus service after the regular bus service. So if you were staying for extracurricular activities, it was difficult.
Right.
So living out in the country, I didn't participate in that much other than basketball and a few other things I don't remember. Mm-hmm. But anyway, that passed.
All right. So and, you're a teenager over here in Somerville.
Yeah.
And what were your aspirations at that point? What are you planning on doing with the rest
well,
of your
life? Well, and there wasn't much aspiration because the income in the family was such that thinking of college was out of line at that point.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know as I was college ready, mm-hmm. but I didn't go anyway because of the money situation.
Right.
So that went by. And it was the depression had started, or was starting.
Right.
And although jobs were not plentiful, my father was lucky enough not to lose his job during the depression, such as some of my relatives did not. I had an uncle who lived in Brooklyn who lost his job. He was an electrician for Hearn's department store,
mm-hmm.
and lost his job and was out of work, and it was part of the WPA program where they were offered jobs to do the type of work he was suited for,
yeah.
in projects where they built highways and buildings and things of that nature under the Roosevelt administration.
Mm-hmm.
Roosevelt was criticized for the work that he did, but at least what he did was make it necessary to work to mm-hmm. get what you needed for food and money. It wasn't a giveaway program like it is today.
Right. I was going to say that. It seems like it's a little bit more reputable that
that's
you're going
right.
out working and earning what you're
and
bringing
I think
in.
That's the problem with today's world is right. that it's a giveaway program. Nobody's made to do something to earn anything. It's,
sure.
it's an easygoing thing, and it's sad.
Yeah.
It's where the present administration could have invented the CCC camp. It used to be a thing like the Army where young men were sent out to the wilds of America and lived in barracks just like you do in the Army.
Mm-hmm.
And they cleaned up the forest and built roads and things of that nature.
Right.
That doesn't happen today. Everybody's looking for the freebie.
Yeah.
Whereas those days, if you wanted something, you had to work for it, at least produce some work.
And consequently, with having all those people do that, we built our infrastructure.
That
to
is correct.
And here we got all these crumbling roads right. and bridges and all this stuff. That
today, when you take a ride through the country and see the amount of trees that are down from the last couple of storms that are laying there,
mm-hmm.
during the CCC program, that didn't happen because the men were sent into the woods to chop that wood up, carry it out, and clean up the forest, for one thing, as well as helping to build roads and
yeah.
other projects that went on at that time.
Right. Neat. Wow, I couldn't agree with you more. So the depression hit. You're everybody's trying to make ends meet, and let's see. The crash started in 29.
That's
right?
Correct.
So you were 11.
That's right. Yes.
And then we move into the 30s, and so now you're in your teens, hitting all this turmoil in our country.
Okay.
So. Did you have a trade you want to go into? Or?
Well, I didn't know. I didn't have one. I the only problem was to find a job of any kind. And luckily, my father, who worked for a paint company, Patterson Sargent Paint at that time, he was the printer for he printed all their labels for the paint cans.
Mm-hmm.
He had been a printer for Collier's Magazine and other places, and I guess lost his job there and had this job at the paint factory. So after graduating from high school, with nothing available, he was able to get me a job there also.
Mm-hmm.
And this was in Long Island City, and we had to commute from Pluckerman to
now
Long Island
do
City
that?
Every day.
How'd you do that?
So we did that by getting up at 4 o'clock in the morning, between 4 and 5 o'clock in the morning,
right.
driving to Somerville, New Jersey, getting a train to Hoboken, a ferry over to New York, subway to Long Island City. Long Island City, walked down to the paint factory where I was in the packing department.
Wow.
You pack the cans of paint into wooden cartons, six six heavy cans to a carton, and then when they were done, delivered them to the warehouse, which is right next door.
Right.
And that was my job for a couple of years.
Now, how long was that commute every day?
Well, as they say, if we got up at 5 o'clock in the morning, caught the train in Somerville in the neighborhood of quarter of 6 or something, and then it's an hour, almost an hour into New York between the Somerville and Long Island City.
I can't even make it to Long Island City in 2 hours.
We didn't get home at night until after 7:30. So
wow.
Your day was pretty shot.
Yeah, you were done. And then in the winter, you didn't see daylight.
The salary at that time was a big $18 a week. There wasn't anything like an hourly wage type of conflict.
No.
You got what they offered.
Wow.
So I was there for a couple of years when World War II erupted, and from that, then it was into the Army Air Force.
All right. That's a great stopping point. We're going to take a quick break, Bill, and we're going to pay for some of our station, and then we'll bring you back, and we'll talk about the war and how you got involved. All right? You're listening to Good Morning Hunterin. This is Bill Nevitt, who's my guest, and we'll be back with more of it and him in just a few minutes. Hang on.
The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce is proud to present HunterdonChamberRadio.com. All business, all talk, all community. Bringing you local news, information, events, and informative programming. Proudly serving the businesses and residents of Hunterdon County, New Jersey. Rab Coins of Flemington, New Jersey has been in business for over 37 years. We are highly competitive buyers of gold, silver, and platinum coins, jewelry, and scrap metals, and have recently been named the exclusive gold buyer for Diamond Nation and HealthQuest. We also provide professional appraisal, sales, and liquidation services for individuals, law firms, estate trustees, and bank trust departments in New Jersey and Philadelphia. Products and services include gold and silver, American and foreign coins, certified rare date and modern coins, numismatic supplies and books, gold, silver, and platinum bullion, paper currency, United States proof, and mint sets, including current issues. From junior collector to the experienced investor, Rab Coins has been for numismatists since 1974. Founder and owner, Randy Block, an expert numismatist, has been an active member of the coin industry for over 45 years. Visit us at 56 Main Street in historic downtown Flemington or call toll-free 1-800-819-9875.
What can you do as a member of Rotary? You can eradicate polio. You can promote peace. You can feed the hungry. You can help children do better in school. Because Rotary believes that by working together, you can do anything. This is District Governor Megan Jones Holt. Learn more about Rotary and join me every Monday at 11 a.m. on the Rotary Hour, the show that is dedicated to answering the ultimate question of what Rotary is. Find us on the web at rotarynj.org. Rotary, humanity in motion.
Unionville Vineyards is the perfect destination for wine tastings and tours, corporate events, birthday parties, or your special day. Located in East Amwell, New Jersey, Unionville Vineyards offers an escape from the rush of daily life and a chance to relax in the beautiful countryside. Our tasting room is open 7 days a week, 12 to 5 p.m., excluding major holidays. For more information, contact us at unionvillevineyards.com or call us at 908-788-0400.
All right, welcome back to Good Morning Hunter and HuntChamber.com. I have my guest here, Bill Nevitt, and we're just talking about growing up in Long Island City, Pluckerman and Somerville and Patterson, all the different places that we are very familiar with. But I'm sure they were much different back then. So, Bill, you were telling us before we went to break, the war broke out, and somehow, some way, you got involved in the military. So what was that decision about, and how did that come about?
Well, before I get into the fact of being in the Air Force, I want to say that while I was still working in Long Island City, this good friend of mine, we were buddies, we always hung out together, and in the pursuit of female companionship.
Oh, okay.
To make a long story short, in searching in Somerville and Pluckerman and Bedminster area, there was nothing that suited, so we went far afield to places like Westfield and Plainfield and Summit.
Okay.
Where I finally met the young lady who I fell in love with immediately.
Wow.
And she was from Summit, New Jersey, and she always reminded me that Summit was the only place on earth. And I met her, and we went together for a while there, and became engaged while I was in the service.
Mm-hmm.
And then I entered the military.
I'm gonna stop there because now you threw a whole nother curveball at me, and I want to find out a little bit more about this now. So you were dealing with commuting all the way to Long Island City on a daily basis. Somehow you were trying to get yourself over to Summit.
Right.
And you said just before we went on break that you were coming home, that your day was shot by the time you got home at 7:30. So what you're seeing your girlfriend, soon-to-be wife-to-be, what, on the weekends?
On the weekends, that's right.
Yeah, that's it.
About the only time.
Yeah, that's
anyway,
it.
Anyway, I got it out of line there a little bit.
No, okay. No, I love it.
Anyway, then the war had broken. I was still working at Patterson Sergeant, and I was drafted,
mm-hmm.
as most men were. Finally, my call came in around April of 42.
So we already had Pearl Harbor. We're already in the war.
Yeah, Pearl Harbor had happened.
Okay.
We heard about Pearl Harbor while we were in our automobile heading for Summit for a date, he with a girl in Summit, and me with also mm-hmm. her friend in Summit.
Right.
Then the word came over the radio that the Japanese has attacked at Pearl Harbor.
Right.
Because the question in those days was, where was Pearl Harbor?
We were hit, and you didn't even know how we got hit. Okay.
We finally found out where it was, and that was the story. Anyway, I was inducted in April, I believe, of 42.
Mm-hmm.
Went to Somerville, where the induction station was, and then the trip to Fort Dix, where I spent a couple of weeks learning how to be a soldier and taking a lot of tests and doing what the military did to you in those first few weeks, a bunch of confusion,
mm-hmm.
learning how to line up for mess hall and how to salute and march and whatever.
Yeah.
Make a bed. Keep your foot locker clean, you know, all the stuff that they threw at you. So right. Anyway, finally, there was posted on the board a number of names that were going to depart by train the next morning.
Mm-hmm.
So on the train and at Fort Dix, and the train started south. And, of course, in those days, no one told you anything about where you were going or what you were going to do.
Oh, you didn't get your orders yet.
You didn't know what was going on. So it was all... It was all rumor and guessing.
Right.
And, of course, at that time, thinking Army, the normal thing is thinking infantry. Well, you know, we knew there were other factors, but still, if the part was that we thought, well, we're going to go to this military base where they had infantry training.
Mm-hmm.
And as the train continued on south,
yep.
we could remember hearing of infantry training stations on the way south, and it was a big place in Georgia. I forget the name of it right mm-hmm. at the moment. But anyway, finally the train arrived in Florida.
Wow.
And we said to ourselves, what's in Florida? Fort Blanding was in Florida. That was a military base.
Right.
But we went right past Fort Blanding, and lo and behold, when we got there, it was with Palm Beach, uh-huh. Miami Beach, Florida.
Wow.
Now, what do you do in Miami Beach, Florida?
Not bad for a guy from Long Island, huh?
Yeah. So we unloaded from the train and went to a large hall where some guy got up and said, gentlemen, you are now in the Army Air Force. Hey, that sounds pretty good to me.
So they didn't, the Air Force and the Army were not separate at this time?
The present Air Force was not established until after World War II.
Okay.
It was called the Army Air Force,
right.
Or Army Air Corps, whichever.
Yeah.
So that was a shock, and it was unbelievable, but sounded pretty good.
Okay.
So we was four or five of us were separated. They separated us in groups and were given a hotel room in one of the swank Florida hotels. And we thought, wait, what's going on? Something's on.
Got Palm Beach.
I don't like this, but I do like it. Anyway, we had this beautiful suite of rooms. We would march down to a cafeteria for our meals.
Uh-huh.
And then during the day, we'd go out on a field and march, learn how to march. And then in the afternoon, we take many, many tests. Well, after about 2 weeks of that, where we were swimming in the Atlantic Ocean every afternoon. This is being in the Army Air Force. This is great. I'll take this. So anyway.
Wow.
Finally came time when we were taken into a hall where we were interviewed by a soldier. And he said, well, Bill, you qualified for many things. He said, I'll give you an option of where would you like to go for training. He said, you can go to Cooks and Baker School. You can go to Armor School. You can go to Mechanic School and a number of other things. He said, and Radio School. And I said, oh. I said, Radio School sounds good to me. Okay. He says, Radio School it is. So the next week or so, I departed for Scottsfield in Illinois.
Okay. Were you ever in these places before? You just stayed in this area. So this is like the grand wild, wild west for you, right?
No, it was that was foreign country to me. Anyway,
yeah.
Got out there, and we were assigned to a barracks and a company, and we had the enlisted people that were stationed there were our guides and put us through our daily routine.
Mm-hmm.
Getting up at 5 o'clock and get out in front of the barracks and name the call, a typical Army procedure.
Right.
And then we would go to school.
Mm-hmm.
Well, at that point, you had two choices. Well, not two choices, but you were taught two things. One was Morse code, and the other was radio mechanic.
Okay.
Consequently, if you couldn't get 5 words of Morse code within the first week,
mm-hmm.
then you were designated as a mechanic. Rather than code.
Right.
I was very disappointed not to make the code thing, and it was delegated to be a mechanic.
Mm-hmm.
Later on, I'll tell you how grateful I am that I missed Morse code.
Well, I know you could put my radio show together here. This is good. I didn't know I had you an expert.
All right. Anyway. Then the Air Force decided that they were going to split the two courses. You either were a code man or you were a mechanic. So
right.
Therefore, when they were changing the school system out at Scott, there was nothing to do until the classes were organized. So consequently, poor Bill had a KP duty for one whole month.
Oh, wow.
And if you think there's anything worse than KP duty in the Army...
It's the traditional peeling the potatoes and stuff.
Well, peeling potatoes and scrubbing pots and pans and that kind of thing. Anyway, that finally passed, and we got into the mechanics of it. I finished the mechanics school in 4 or 5 weeks. I don't know how long it was exactly. Maybe a month and a half. Anyway,
mm-hmm.
then when we graduated, then I was sent with two other fellas back to Florida. To go to a new school, which was called DF School, that's the designation of direction finding. It was a part of radar in which he was stationed in a truck on the airfield, and you were able to speak by radio to the pilots. Fighter pilots were not given navigation mm-hmm. in their training. So therefore, there was a need for this DF school because when the pilots were returning from a mission and they were a little bit lost or the weather was inclement where they couldn't see,
mm-hmm.
this direction finding
so you're a GPS
instrument would they would call in and give and push their key on their radio where you'd pick it up on this DF station and you'd have a compass wheel. And you'd be able to tell where they were, and you'd give them a vector to fly right over the base to get home.
Oh.
I was schooled in that, and it was the first time the school was in session.
Mm-hmm.
So everybody was trying to learn at the same time. So I was seated at a beautiful dinner table, napkins, knives, forks, steaks, fruit, everything, along with
Florida
generals,
sounds great,
colonels, and captains, and ordinary fellows.
Uh-huh.
Which was another good part.
Yep.
Consequently, then, after that, I was put on a train by myself and two other guys, and I had the orders to report to Baltimore, Ohio, to my fighter squadron. got to Baltimore, was picked up by somebody from the base, mm-hmm. brought out to Baltimore Air Base, and that was my fighter squadron, the 350th Fighter Squadron, part of the 353rd Fighter Group, and went into training. The pilots were flying at that point P-40s, which is the old Tomahawk, mm-hmm. which is the plane made famous by the AVG, the Chinese volunteer group that flew for China.
Right.
I can't think of their names right now. AVC, they were called.
Mm-hmm.
And they trained on those for a while, and we were about ready to leave to go overseas when the P-47 became available, which was the Thunderbolt.
Right.
A large, very large fighter plane, had 8 guns, 4 on each wing, great big, much bigger than what people would consider a fighter plane.
Mm-hmm.
The pilots then trained in those for 6 months or so and became adept at that. We lost a few pilots by mistake, accident, so on, naturally. And then we were alerted for overseas duty and went to Richmond to get together with the group. The other 3 squadrons in the group were stationed at other places, so we all got together at Richmond, Virginia. Why they did that, I don't know, but that's the way they did it.
Yeah.
And then all were transported back to Fort Kilmer, mm-hmm. in New Jersey. Eventually, one day, got on the train and went to Hoboken, mm-hmm. dragging our barracks bags and our tool kit and everything along from the train to the ferry, onto the ferry across to New York and onto a ship. At that point, we were still unknown as to what it was, but it turned out to be the Queen Mary.
Well, wow, you were good transport.
There were 18,000 of us on the Queen Mary.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, the 353rd Fighter Group personnel were stationed in what used to be the swimming pool. They built the bunks alongside
in the swimming
the pool.
Nice.
And that's where there was no water.
Oh, yeah, of course.
And that's where we went across the ocean. And the first morning, of course, those days, it was all convoy, you know, ships being sunk and all the other.
Sure.
So it was a little bit scary.
Yep.
But the next morning we got up after the Queen Mary left the dock. We were out in the ocean, and there's nothing but the Queen Mary.
Right.
Which was a little bit frightening.
Mm-hmm.
Because where was our convoy? Where was our protection? And the story was the Queen Mary and the Queen Elizabeth made many, many crossings, taking troops back and forth without any escort at all because their speed was such that they were able to maneuver away from any U-boats.
Okay.
And the
wow.
Queen Mary would shift position every 8 minutes, I believe, we were told.
Mm-hmm.
But it wasn't a very good crossing because we were fed British food, which in the first place had much to be desired.
Mm-hmm.
And we were fed twice a day, so the minute you finished your breakfast, you got in line again for dinner. And the only way we were able to get anything decent was to bribe the British shipmen that would supply us with sandwiches now and then.
There you go. So you were. This is the first time I actually heard any kind of emotional concern by you when you were on the ship. All this other time, you were okay with everything that was going on.
You know, you accepted what you had to do. It was, you were in the army and you mm-hmm. did what they told you to do. So there's nothing much you could. Of course, you could moan and groan about many things, that was the way it went.
Just talking about, you know, survival and perseverance. That's all
that's
I'm
right, yeah.
wondering. So where did you end up in Europe?
Well, the Queen Mary took us to England, of course,
mm-hmm.
and that was the 8th Air Force, which was the greatest air force ever assembled, or rather will be assembled, with the amount of... There were 15 fighter groups, and there must have been 30 bomber groups in England in the 8th Air Force.
Right.
And so when we landed in Scotland and took a train down to our first staging base, which was a place called Grimsby,
mm-hmm.
which was across the river from a place called Hull. And I have an incident I'd like to discuss about that. After we were there a week or so ago, a week or more, we were allowed a weekend off.
Mm-hmm.
And this buddy of mine, Joe Lopin, and I decided we'd go over to Hull and spend the night at a hotel and have a few drinks, which we did.
Mm-hmm.
And during the night, Joe had a little bit more than he should have had and was having a upset stomach. And we were disturbed about that. But anyway, the next morning when we got up, he was better, and we walked outside. And the doorman at the hotel said, bit of a do last night, hey, lads? And, of course, we thought, how the hell did he know we were drunk? Yeah. It turns out that the Germans were using Hull as a target base, and half of the town had been destroyed the night while we were still asleep.
Wow.
And it kind of, that was the first shock I had. That was, I was
that you were right in the middle of it.
I was in the war then.
Wow. Wow. Amazing. You were saying that you got engaged and eventually you're going to be married. Were you already engaged at that point?
I became engaged the Christmas before I went overseas in June.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. So you were behaving yourself.
Yes, I was.
All
yes,
right.
Yes,
good.
Yes.
Good for you. All right. So now, believe it or not, Bill, we're flying through the hour here.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's okay. No, it's all great stuff. But I just want to make sure we get to other.
Okay. Well, I could talk about the Air Force forever.
Yeah.
Because that was my life after that for many, many years.
Yep.
I
guess I'd like to hear how you think about the war at that particular time and how we don't necessarily understand the challenge that you all were facing at that particular point. We weren't exactly as strong and as sure of ourselves as a country in World War II as we are or we think we are today, right?
Well, I my outlook on it was that we were a very, very great force in winning the war, and the activity, the dedication was such that in the Air Force, particularly, we lost many, many. I lost many, many good friends who were pilots by accident and by being shot down or prisoner of war, whatever the case may be. We lost something like 50 or 60 pilots during the 3 years we were over there.
Right.
And we had 51 aces by the time the war was over, which was a pilot who had shot down five or more airplanes. The Air Force was different than the regular Army in the fact that it was more a working arrangement than it was fighting with a gun.
Mm-hmm.
You dedicated yourself to making sure that the radios in the planes that you were assigned to were well taken care of, so the pilot would have somebody to communicate with.
Mm-hmm.
So you became more, there was no, only in certain instances would it be yes sir or no sir or thank you sir or colonel or whatever. We were buddies. I called him.
Despite the rank.
I called my squadron commander Bill. He called me Bill.
Yeah.
So it was a very band of brothers, as they used to say.
Right.
In the Air Force was wonderful. And we had many, our group flew over more than 400 missions during the years we were there.
Mm-hmm.
And were credited with many campaign medals and presidential unit citation. Wow.
And did you do the whole thing? Were you there for the whole war?
I was the whole thing. Of course, pilots, after they would finish 200 hours of flying time, were allowed to go home, and many of them came back for a second tour.
Right.
Why they wanted to, I don't know, but they did. And it was a great experience that I'll never forget. And it continued after the war, where we had reunions every year.
Mm-hmm.
And many of the men from the group got together at different places over the country for reunions. And we finally joined up with the 8th Air Force, who had reunions every year. And we combined them so that for the past 20 years I was running the communicator of the whole thing and helped organize the reunions and enjoyed it very, very much.
Neat.
And after the war, we became more friendly because we got to know the people a lot better.
Yeah.
And it was very enjoyable.
Great. Wow. A lot of good stuff in there. And we could go out and talk about it for days, obviously.
Yeah.
We're going to take another quick break, and we're going to be back and get your final thoughts about how the world has changed, I guess, over the last, 70, 80 years? All right. So hang on. You're listening to Good Morning Hunterdon, huntingchamberradio.com. Let Stowaway Self-Storage be your local moving and storage solution. With three great locations in Hunterdon County, Stowaway is conveniently located in Flemington, White House, and Lebanon. Stowaway Self-Storage offers sizes from 5x5 to 50x50, discounted packing supplies, and U-Haul rentals on site. Affordable monthly rentals for your personal and business use, let Stowaway help you park your car in the garage again or store those old records that you need to keep. Visit us at stowawayselfstorage.com and mention this ad to receive 50% off your first month's rent.
Rab Coins of Flemington, New Jersey has been in business for over 37 years. We are highly competitive buyers of gold, silver, and platinum coins, jewelry, and scrap metals, and have recently been named the exclusive gold buyer for Diamond Nation and Hellfest. We also provide professional appraisal, sales, and liquidation services for individuals, law firms, estate trustees, and bank trust departments in New Jersey and Philadelphia. Products and services include gold and silver, American and foreign coins, certified rare date and modern coins, numismatic supplies and books, gold, silver, and platinum bullion, paper currency, United States proof, and mint sets, including current issues. From junior collector to the experienced investor, Rab Coins has been for numismatists since 1974. Founder and owner, Randy Block, an expert numismatist, has been an active member of the coin industry for over 45 years. Visit us at 56 Main Street in historic downtown Flemington or call toll-free 1-800-819-9875.
All right, welcome back to Good Morning Hunterdon and HuntingtonBureau.com. I have Bill Nevitt here, who's talking all about the Army Air Force and his experience out there in Europe during the war. And, Bill, after all that finished up, I know you told me you want to talk a little bit about family life. So what exactly did you want to relate to everybody?
Well, I just want to explain. Maybe it took too long with the other explanations. But anyway, coming home on the Europa, which was the ship that was in dry dock in Europe for many years, the Navy had taken it over, mm-hmm. and I came home in the Europa and landed in September, I believe. And 2 weeks later, my wife dragged me before the minister, and we were married.
It's always the way, isn't it?
And we finally moved to Bedminster, New Jersey. We purchased a home with a veteran's 4% loan, one of the first ones at the Peapack Gladstone Bank.
Wow.
Raised three beautiful children. I have a daughter, Nancy, who lives in White House Station, Kathy, who now resides in Chicago, and Bill in, up in New York. Saratoga Springs,
Saratoga.
Sorry, Bill. My daughter Nancy has two children, my two granddaughters.
Wow.
Nancy lives, Janelle lives in Gladstone, and Janine lives out in Denver, Colorado. Bill's up in New York State, and as I say, Kathy in Chicago.
Wow.
We had fun raising the three children. It wasn't easy. Money, again, was still tight.
Mm-hmm.
I finally, my wife was working at Bell Laboratories in Murray Hill. Worked with some of the great inventors of this time.
Yes,
Doc Shock, who invented the transmitter,
mm-hmm.
the transistor.
Right.
And she had a wonderful life there as a senior secretary at Bell Labs. I finally wound up with the Macy chain of stores. It was then called Bamberger's.
Mm-hmm.
Spent many years, 15 years in Morristown, 10 years in Newark, and finally wound up in East Brunswick, New Jersey. Retired in 1980, and we spent many days in traveling all over the country with my reunions with my fighter group,
mm-hmm.
and went to Hawaii and
good for you.
Miami Beach, Cape Cod. We loved all those places. We're very, very happy that we did those things in retirement.
Mm-hmm.
And that's about the story on that part of it.
All right. I'm going to ask you a quick question because you only got about a few minutes left.
Okay.
In all that you've experienced, now you started out as a kid, you've been in the Jersey, Long Island area. What would you say is the most amazing experience that you've had?
Well, I don't want to call it an amazing experience. First of all, I raised my family, and second, my years in the Air Force, I guess, would be the top.
Good for you. That's great stuff. It sounds like you're a family man, and you worked hard. Was the Army Air Force experience able to transition you into civilian life?
It taught me a lot about how to be a good person and to hopefully indoctrinate my children into being good people, which they certainly are. They're all very, very well. They're healthy, and they all have good jobs. And matter of fact, my son Bill, who's going to be 62 in December, is retiring.
All right, good for him. And up in Saratoga. He's already in the retirement area up there.
Right.
He already made it. give us a little bit of wisdom from you as to how people should conduct themselves that we've missed out on.
Well, that's another long story that would have to take an awful lot of time to do.
You're going to have to shorten it.
It's very disappointing, if you want to use that term, to see the way that the world has turned politically in the way that it is. We are not what we used to be. I think that we're heading in the wrong direction, and I hope that someday, being a conservative and a Republican, I hope the Republican Party can get themselves together and do something to alleviate all this minus press about the politicians and, it's confusing.
Yeah.
And it's very disappointing that people don't care anymore. There's no integrity. The people don't like their jobs. The people that own the companies don't seem to care much about their health. Mm-hmm. They overwork them. It's hard to talk about and would take too long to express all my feelings about it.
Sure.
I'm not too happy with it. But hey.
All right.
Nothing I can do about it.
No, we'll have to schedule another time to get on some of Bill's political views. But appreciate you giving us the time and all the insight into your experiences through the war and growing up in the New Jersey, Long Island area, Long Island City area. I'm glad we could do this. Jim, I'm going to give you again a shout-out and say, hey, thanks for arranging this for me. And, Bill, your children, your grandchildren, I'm sure, got a wealth of knowledge today, and hopefully you're going to relate a lot of that to them in the future as well. But wish you the best of luck, and we'll make sure we make it another arrangement for me to come on by again and get some more insight from you.
Fine. Thank you.
All right. Thank you so much for coming by and doing this for us.
Okay.
All right. That is Bill Nevitt, and he is a retired hero over in Independence Manor, and you heard from him a tremendous amount about what life was like back during the war. We're going to, time for me to get on out of here. I got to switch over to the studio. The Modern Design is up next with Richard Scuderi. Been my pleasure to be with you as I am every weekday morning, 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. I'll be back again tomorrow morning in the studio. Thank you to Michelle Heidi. Thank you to Diane Lane, and thank you to Mr. Bill Nevitt for their contributions to the show. Vincent Arnolino says, never say I should have. I'll take the words of this man right here in front of me. Time to start owning up to your responsibilities and your integrity and start getting our country on the right track. Talk to you tomorrow, folks. Have a good day. It's a beautiful day out there. Good morning, Hunter, and HuntingChamberRadio.com.
Traveling deep into the Middle East to experience the authentic sights and sounds of Arabia. From vast deserts to warm, exotic waters and a land rich in resources. But you won't have to come this far to hear the music. We've got music from all over the world right here on Live 365. Become a VIP member today and listen commercial-free to exclusive international stations. Start your VIP journey today at Live365.com/VIP.
This is why you work so hard to pay the mortgage. Because home is more than four walls and a roof. It's that porch swing and a summer evening. It's every...
Leadership of her state, Haley and GOP Senators Lindsey Graham and Tim Scott have all called for the battle flag to be removed, as have 2012 Republican presidential nominee Mitt Romney and 2016 candidate Jeb Bush. More than 1,000 law enforcement officers are converging on the area of Owl's Head in Franklin County, New York. The ongoing search for two escaped killers. New York State Police say they are continuing to aggressively pursue leads in the search for David Sweat and Richard Matt. The severe weather that pummeled the Midwest is expected to do more damage today as it sweeps toward the Northeast. Forecasters say the storm system could bring dangerous wind gusts, even tornadoes. Over a dozen tornadoes were reported across four states yesterday. This is USA Headline News.
Want a more colorful summer? Ask Sherwin-Williams and save 30% on paints and stains during the Great Summer Painting Party, June 21st through July 6th. With colors like Beach House, Julep, and Fireworks, summer never looked better. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams paint store and save 30% today. Find your nearest store at sherwinwilliams.com/sale. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
You're getting very sleepy.
Sleepy.
You're no longer afraid of bunnies.
Bunnies.
You'll join my rewards program.
I'll join your... Wait, what?
50% off your fifth session. Huh? Focus on the value.
Value.
How about a rewards program you'll actually use every day? Finally, there's Plenty. Earn points at one place and use them at another. Sign up today at plentywithani.com for access to offers worth over $100 in savings. There's Plenty together. Terms and conditions apply.
PTSD Month is continuing around the nation and the Northwest, especially at local military bases. Marine Corps First Sergeant Simon Sandoval says it often gets tough for soldiers returning from deployments after the welcome home celebration.
You'll start to have the effects of the memories and the relapses that, you know, going through the hardships that he had to experience, you know, whether it was a firefighter losing a buddy, this starts to deteriorate.
Sandoval says that's where the Real Warriors campaign comes in with helpful psychological tools, especially for service members with more deployments ahead. The Department of Veterans Affairs says slightly more than half of the warriors may experience symptoms of post-traumatic stress disorder. Marine Corps First Sergeant Simon Sandoval says the Real Warriors can help military people with psychological wounds from deployments get back in the game.
Being able to find the resources to help them, such as the Real Warriors campaign, you know, this is something that they can take advantage of.
And to find out more and maybe even get involved, simply log on to realwarriors.net. This is U.S.
We lived in Elmhurst at that time. I'm sorry.
Okay.
After my mother's father died, we moved to Elmhurst, New York. Mm-hmm. Lived there for a couple of years until my mom passed away. And then after that, my grandmother came into Elmhurst to take care of us for about a year till I finished eighth grade, or part of eighth grade. Then we moved out to Plaquemine,
mm-hmm.
where I finished up in Plaquemine School, which was a four-room schoolhouse, which I was quite unused to with living in the city. To come out to a little tiny schoolhouse like that was enough something to be aware of. Anyway, I finished grammar school there and then eventually went to Somerville High School.
All right.
And
wow.
Enjoyed many years in Plaquemine. Most of my duties as a young man, my grandmother was a good taskmaster, but a wonderful woman. But my job mainly at that time was because there were no electric heating. We had a coal stove in the kitchen and a large furnace in the basement that burned wood. So Bill's job was most of the time to walk himself up to the mountain on the farm that my grandmother owned, into the mountain to chop down trees, to bring them down, drag them down from the mountain,
mm-hmm.
down to the backyard where eventually they were sawed up and chopped for wood to burn the furnace, to burn in the stove so that we were able to have heat and to be able to cook.
Wow.
My years in Somerville High School were average. I played a little basketball, not much, but
What was it like? Was there a huge difference in the urban versus the country back then?
Well, as a young man, those type of things did not imprint too much on your mind, but yes, there was a big difference in the change from city life as it was mm. to country life. There was not as many people around, of course, and when you had to go someplace in the country, it was a long walk from. We lived about a mile and a half up Washington Valley Road between Martinsville and Plaquemine.
Right.
And to get to the school bus, I had to walk from our farmhouse down about a mile and a half to the center of Plaquemine, where I'd get the school bus to go to Somerville.
You had to walk a mile and a half.
I had a mile and a half up and down.
Now, what do you say?
And they say through snow both ways. What's the story they
uphill.
Talk about?
Uphill both ways. But here we have kids that they don't even walk a mile and a half to the school.
That's right.
You're walking a mile and a half to the bus to get to the school.
That's right. Yeah.
Oh, my.
Yeah. So school activities were hampered because there was no bus service after the regular bus service. So mm-hmm. if you were staying for extracurricular activities, it was difficult.
Right.
So living out in the country, I didn't participate in that much other than basketball and a few other things I don't remember. Mm-hmm. But anyway, that passed.
All right, so you're a teenager over here in Somerville.
Yeah.
And what were your aspirations at that point? What are you planning on doing with the rest
of
your life?
Well, there wasn't much aspiration because the income in the family was such that thinking of college was out of line at that point.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know as I was college ready.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't go anyway because of the money situation.
Right.
So that went by. And it was the Depression had started, or was starting.
Right.
And although jobs were not plentiful, my father was lucky enough not to lose his job during the Depression, such as some of my relatives did not. I had an uncle who lived in Brooklyn who lost a job. He was an electrician for Hearn's department store.
Mm-hmm.
And lost a job and was out of work, and it was part of the WPA program where they were offered jobs to do the type of work he was suited for
yeah.
in projects